The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
This is Squawk Pod. I'm CNBC producer Cameron Costa. Today on our podcast, AstraZeneca out with efficacy data for its COVID vaccine. President of AstraZeneca US, Dr. Ruud Dobber.
We are thrilled by the results we have disclosed this morning. 79% efficacy against symptomatic COVID-19. But I think equally very important, 100% protection against severe disease and hospitalization.
And Wall Street's rookies are speaking up. 100-hour work weeks are taking their toll on junior bankers, but veteran financiers have little sympathy. Vanity Fair's William Cohen.
We all had these thoughts, and we thought we were working too hard. That's just the way it is. And we didn't really say anything.
And Kate Kelly from the New York Times.
You know, this is the nature of entry-level banking, and I'm not certain that it's going to change.
Those stories, plus another birthday for the ageless William Shatner, a new price target for Tesla stock, and of course, some March Madness updates.
I was betting on the opposite of my bracket picks, and that was starting to work.
Smart.
It's Monday, March 22nd, 2021. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Hey, good morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk Box here on CNBC. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Karna, and Andrew is off this week. Results are in from a U.S. study that show AstraZeneca's COVID-19 vaccine is 100% effective against severe disease and hospitalization. It's 79% effective at preventing symptomatic illness. And the study also shows no higher risk of blood clots, which had been the subject of investigations overseas, the reasons that they had shut down in several countries in the EU.
That's Rutgers red you're wearing, isn't it? I'm sorry about that.
It is. That was, I know, but they played so well.
Great showing. I know. Houston is a good team. I told your husband that. He said we got a really
Houston's
weak.
Houston's a great team. It's number six in the country.
That's what I mean. He said we got a weak number two seed. I go, Houston is not. Houston beat Cincinnati by 30. But you know what? I'm done. Make it stop. Please. Please. Please.
I was going to say, Rutgers performed better than your bracket, I am sure.
Make it stop. You know who has a bracket? It's like she's like 1,000 out of 3 million. Blake, my daughter.
You're kidding me.
She picks Loyola because of Sister Jean. She picks Syracuse because her financial literacy group has a chapter in Syracuse. So, I'm picking Syracuse. And then she picked. Not one thing had anything to do with, she even tweeted,
so
I haven't
what?
Seen a single game.
Spitting
I haven't
your
seen
butt.
Killing me. For a while, I'll tell you what was working, and then we'll get to the news. I was betting on the opposite of my bracket picks, and that was starting
smart.
To work. That was starting to work. Like
Very
the gods
smart.
Were like, but then they figured that out, and then the point spread started. I started losing because of that. But the thing that I'm most thankful
they
for.
They figured that out and made you
they
lose.
They figured it out. They figured out. I was betting against myself and it was working. It was like, wow, I figured out a system here. And then that stopped working. But number one, I'm glad I bet $3 because there's no way to make money doing this. It's impossible. You will be in a world of hurt. Did you see? I had Illinois going all the way. They lost to Sister Jean's team. Yeah, oh yeah. That bracket busted. Did you see? Oral Roberts.
Oral Roberts.
Who knew?
I didn't see the final last night.
Me neither.
The final last night with Florida. Yeah, but hey, just remind me later. We've got news that we should get to, but remind me. I talked to Buffett last night, Warren Buffett, about the bracket that they do at Berkshire. Yeah,
no
about the brackets they do at Berkshire,
and
we can.
No, never
it was
happened.
A terrible year,
never
but
happened.
I'll tell you what
never
the news
happened.
Was like.
You will rise. You will be the second coming of JC. If anyone ever does it, they're not human. If anyone ever gets the brackets completely right. Honestly, I think we'll cure death.
You only have to get the first round right. If you get 32, if you can pick 32, they'll pay you $1 million.
So,
which they've had 31 amazing. Out of 32, but not this year. Not this year.
Well, Rutgers did a great showing. Great. That could have gone in too. That last 3-pointer.
The wealthiest 1% of U.S. households fail to report about 21% of their income. That's according to a new study that's being published by the National Bureau of Economic Research. Researchers there found that the richest Americans use sophisticated strategies that random audits don't detect, including businesses that are set up as partnerships to pass through income to individual tax returns, avoiding taxation at the corporate level. The commissioner of the IRS referenced this new research in congressional testimony last week. He said each additional dollar spent on tax enforcement could yield $5 to $7 in revenue. But that's a good one, where individuals are pretending that they're businesses and passing that through. That's something we should really crack down on. Instead of raising rates, why don't you go after all the people who are kind of getting around at the edges and tighten things up?
I just don't understand what we're really saying here. Is it legal?
I don't think so. I think that's
evasion.
Disingenuous.
That's not avoidance. That's tax evasion.
Yeah.
And that's why
I think at the very best, it's disingenuous. You're looking to get these lower rates and pretending that you are a corporation when you're an individual who should be paying.
It should be clear in the law, though. Disingenuous, or, you know, those are all words. It should be clear in the law. If you're breaking the law.
It's probably a gray area.
Well, if it's a gray area, then you're bending the law, and people are going to do that.
But the law should be clearer. Make the law very clear. I mean, that's
but
what I mean. Get rid
actually,
of any of these.
If you evade taxes, you should go to jail. There are penalties where you go to jail if you are deliberately evading taxes. Now, if you're setting up
sophisticated tax strategies, where it's not very right to try and work around the gray areas of the law where it's not done more clearly. This is something that we should make very clear. If you are an individual who's pretending you're a corporation, I can hear a million people. I know people who do this.
Right.
I can hear the excuses for why you're doing this. But as a result, you're not paying the individual tax rate for the work that you would be doing, this W-2 work. That's crazy.
But then you get into the finger pointing to real estate people or for companies that have, 10-year loss carry forwards and things like that. And you have finger pointing that they're not paying their fair share when it's totally legal. So, it's either evasion or avoidance.
If you need more money, I wish that Congress would be clearer about the laws and then the IRS would enforce those laws rather than raising taxes on everybody who's already paying those high rates because we're not avoiding it.
I prefer to see them tighten up around the edges. Legal strategies that people are perfectly justified
legal.
In using. Yeah, if it's legal, I would, if you can do it, that's... If it's avoidance, it's one thing. It's very clear. Avoidance is what that Supreme Court Justice Hand, whatever his name was, said it's patriotic to make sure that you don't pay a penny more than you're supposed to pay. I know we've got patriotic millionaires who, by the way, never voluntarily pay anyway. They just lecture everyone else. But if it's evasion, you need to go to jail. And if you're not talking about if you're not reporting income that you're supposed to report, and that's done all the time, you see people get caught doing that, and they go to jail. They're in trouble. I mean, it becomes a huge scandal. Yeah. Now, if you're setting up, these intricate that's unfortunate. Rich people can find really great accountants to set up really intricate, especially estate taxes. You think rich people pay estate taxes? They said they've got all kinds of ways that they get around that. So then change the law. But if it's within the law, then, I would do it too. Check out the shares of Tesla. Over the weekend, ARK invests Kathy Wood out with a new price target on the stock, expecting it to hit $3,000 by 2025. That means Wood expects to earn about 50% a year on average between now and 2025, based on Friday's closing price of $655 a share. A $3,000 a share price would also give Tesla a roughly, get this, $3.6 trillion market cap. You see the Wall Street Journal, the Journal has a piece on these influencers, and it's kind of cool. We know them all. Some of them, Chamath is on here. Portnoy is on here. Kathy Wood. And it says this is nothing new.
It's got to be Elon, right?
Elon's the first guy they mentioned. So we were just talking about when he says game stonk. And then it goes, and I like this. This isn't new. It used to be Bill Miller, Peter Lynch, and Warren Buffett. I don't know. Might be a little bit new when it becomes, Dave Portnoy, and Warren Buffett. A little bit different these days.
I mentioned earlier that I had some information on the Berkshire Hathaway Bracket Challenge. Remember, this is something they've been doing for about 5 years now in-house. They've got 360,000 employees. Any of them can sign up for this Bracket Challenge. And if you pick the first round, all 32 games, you get $1 million. If you make it, I think, to the Sweet 16, you would get $1 million a year for life. And just based on who does the best, whatever employee does the best, they give $100,000 to that employee. And by the way, Buffett tweaked the rules because, as you know, he's a Creighton fan. If Creighton makes it to the Final Four, whoever wins gets $200,000. And they already have a winner. And this year was faster than ever. First of all, only about 50,000 people signed up, which he was a little surprised by because people are at home. But I guess normally you'd have closer to 80,000 people signing up. But usually it happens because people are in the office kind of trash talking and getting excited about it, building morale, right, going back and forth between the teams. But with so many people working at home, a lot of people didn't do it or forgot like I did this year. This was the fastest they've ever seen a winner. It only took about 11 games because there were so many bracket busters this time around. And they have a guy who works in one of their insurance companies who tells them the numbers every day. He kind of runs through and says, okay, if Ohio State had won, he had said there'd be about 15,000 people who would still be left in the pool. If Oral Roberts won, it would only be about 250 people. And in fact, Oral Roberts won. So that was a big bracket buster for them that time around. And he just says he's never seen anything like it. And it was all over by the 11th game. He said he hadn't actually entered himself, but he would have done miserably, he said, had he filled out a bracket.
As bad as I've done. Like I said, I'm 50. You and Quayle, I mean, what happened? You and your husband, neither one of you, you know? So you're like, oh, you're not even...
It's busy here. It's, you know,
just go
I
through.
Meant to do it. I literally came home from picking up Kyle from school and realized I'd missed the deadline.
I know there's, I thought, wow, it's going to be a great year. There's like 90 people, but it's not. It's not, it's like half that, I think. They're all on there, but they didn't complete their, brackets. Actually, it's been very... It's been a big hit. I mean, if you really were counting on your picks, if you were really married to your picks and feeling good about them, just watching what happened has been very, very depressing.
That's the best part of March Madness. Actually, the best part is the games, but the other best part is watching people who are so confident get crumbled.
My brackets.
I mean, the whole, the teams.
You got them all the way to the Final Four, and they're dead the very first day. They're like, within
right.
the first half, they're like dead. It's like, oh, never mind.
A lot of bracket busters this year. What happened to Illinois? You know, what happened? So many what happens. Texas,
all of them. So many. We're going to break. Happy birthday, Bill Shatner.
Next on Squawk Pod, the big news from the latest COVID vaccine candidate. That's number 4, headed out for emergency use. AstraZeneca's top U.S. executive on efficacy, overcoming stumbles, and fighting virus variants.
We have good hopes, at least for the UK and the Brazilian variants, that our vaccine is highly effective. And the jury is still out with respect to the South African variants.
We'll be right back.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
This is Squawk Pod, today with Joe Kernan and Becky Quick. Here's Joe.
Here's the news breaking around 3 a.m. Eastern. AstraZeneca releasing the efficacy numbers from its U.S. vaccine clinical trial, and Meg Terrell has been waiting patiently with these numbers. they're good, Meg. They're not in the 90s, but all these vaccines, give me any of them, twice, six times.
Exactly, Joe. This one would be twice. It is a two-shot vaccine from AstraZeneca. These were highly anticipated results from the U.S. trial of AstraZeneca and Oxford's vaccine of 32,000 people. The headline number, 79% efficacy against symptomatic disease. They say it was 100% effective against severe disease and hospitalization. And they say for people who are over 65, this was an important group because there were some questions about efficacy in this group. 80% efficacy for folks 65 and older. older. Now, they also said it was well tolerated in this clinical trial, and they specifically looked at whether there was a risk of clotting, for example, because, of course, there are those concerns in Europe. And they said there were no safety concerns, including around clotting in the trial. Now, this was run in the U.S., Peru, and Chile, more than 32,000 people. And they said they saw 141 symptomatic cases here at this interim look. So they are going to continue to analyze these data and then file for emergency use authorization in the United States in the coming weeks. Now, guys, we mentioned this is a two-shot vaccine. They gave the doses 4 weeks apart. And interestingly, they saw actually in previous trials that when they spaced those doses farther apart, more than 12 weeks, the efficacy number actually went up. And so it'll be very interesting to see what their strategy is with the FDA and what the dosing strategy turns out to be. But 79% efficacy, higher, I think, than many people expected for these results, given what we've seen around the world so far. And guys, this is a vaccine that can be stored in the fridge for 6 months. So that makes it easier to administer. There are some remaining questions, though. That 100% efficacy against severe disease, we don't know how many cases there were in the placebo group of severe disease or hospitalizations. So those will be further data we'll be looking for. In addition to the presence of variants in the trial, we don't know, you know, what makeup of variants there were here in the U.S., Peru, and Chile in this trial, guys. But pretty positive results here for AstraZeneca this morning, Joe.
Thanks, Meg.
For more about the good news, Meg Terrell brought the president of AstraZeneca U.S. Biopharmaceuticals, Dr. Rue Dauber, onto the TV broadcast this morning.
Dr. Dauber, it's great to see you this morning. These data, better than expected from your U.S. trial, 79% efficacy overall. You plan to file for emergency use authorization, we understand, within the coming weeks. What's your expectation for the timing of when this could be available here in the U.S. and the role this vaccine could play, as there are already three others here on the market?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me in your show. Yeah, absolutely. We are thrilled by the results we have disclosed this morning. 79% efficacy against symptomatic COVID-19, but I think equally very important, 100% protection against severe disease and hospitalization. So the plan is to file in the first half of April for the emergency use authorization. And of course, then it's in the hands of the FDA how fast they can decide about the approval, and assume that the approval will take place in a fast way. We hope to deliver 30 million doses instantly after the EUA for Americans to get vaccinated. I think it's incredibly important that despite the good progress we have seen across all vaccine producers, that there is still a need for more vaccines in the United States, but clearly also in the world. So we are thrilled with those results, and hopefully it will help in order to fight against this terrible pandemic.
You mentioned that 100% efficacy against severe disease and hospitalization, which, of course, is what you want to see vaccines do. Can you tell us anything about the strength of that finding? How many people in the placebo group were hospitalized or had severe disease?
Yeah, so it was a very large trial. It was a trial over 30,000 participants, primarily in the United States, but also some participants in Peru and Chile. And what we clearly saw is that we had in our vaccinated group zero cases of severe disease or death, while we had five cases in the non-vaccinated group. So very strong. It's an interim analysis. So we are still accumulating some more events, but we are very comfortable based also on other trials that the vaccine is 100% protective against severe disease and hospitalization.
And have you seen the presence of variants in these data? Of course, these are interim results, but any sequencing that you've done so far showing efficacy against different variants of the coronavirus?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. The short answer is no. As we speak, we are analyzing the sequence of all the variants. Of course, what we observe now in the United States as well as across the world is different than we saw, let's say, 7-8 months ago. The Brazilian variant, the UK variant, in some cases the South African variant. So we will start, or we have already started, sequencing of all the variants in all the subjects. And that will be clearly part of the package submitted to the FDA as well.
And tell us about the safety analysis here. Of course, the blood clot risk in Europe causing several countries to suspend use of the vaccine, Europe then clearing the vaccine, many countries resuming its use. You specifically looked at this in the trial, and your independent data safety monitoring board did, and didn't find that risk. How is AstraZeneca looking at that risk, and also about how to communicate about the safety of this vaccine, and if that's a hurdle to overcome for you?
Yeah, as always, and I think I speak on behalf of all manufacturers, safety, patient safety is our number one priority. So every signal we take extremely seriously. But of course, equally, regulators are doing the same, as well as in this case, the Data Safety Monitoring Board. I think it was very pleasing to see that even with a magnifying glass, the Data Safety Monitoring Board didn't see any imbalance between the vaccinated group and the placebo group. So that gives us a lot of confidence. Equally, as you perhaps have seen also last week, two very important regulators, the EMA in Europe as well as the MHRA in the UK, confirmed the safety, and they concluded that the efficacy of the vaccine far outweighs the safety of the vaccine. So we are very comfortable and confident, but equally, of course, this is always an area where we will look into, and if there is any need in order to do more, we will certainly do that.
Dr. Dauber, just to clarify, the efficacy numbers that we've seen were based on the trials that were run when? Because as you mentioned, things are changing here pretty rapidly in the United States in terms of the variants that are running around here. Same story for the other companies that had run their trials earlier. But those trials were run 7 to 8 months ago. How recent and updated is that information, and how closely does it look like the situation that we're watching in the United States today with those variants?
Yeah. Once again, that's absolutely an excellent question. We know in the United States as well that the UK variant is growing very fast, and so the analysis we're going to do once again is to test and sequence by PCR all the different variants of all the subjects which were part of our study, and that will give us insight how the efficacy will hold up against all those variants. So there's a lot of work ongoing, not only in the United States, but across the globe, in order to get a better feel for the effectiveness of the vaccine. And we have good hopes, at least for the UK and the Brazilian variants, that our vaccine is highly effective. And the jury is still out with respect to the South African variants. But there's a lot of effort already ongoing in order to produce potentially a new vaccine, which will cover the variants in a more aggressive and better way.
Mm. Tell us about AstraZeneca's ability to meet supply obligations. We understand that in terms of supplying Europe, you'll be about 100 million doses short in the first half of this year. I know you have big goals of 3 billion doses for the full year. What does it look like right now in terms of your ability to supply the world?
Yeah, that's another excellent question. We do everything what we can do in order to beef up our supply. It's a very complex process. We knew that. We have set ourselves high ambitions, not only for the developed market, but also for the developing countries in the world. What we are always saying, no one is safe till the whole world is safe. And as we speak, we are supplying multiple countries in the world. But of course, the effort is massive. We need to supply in a combined way billions of dollars, billions of doses across the world. That's not easy, but equally, we are working hard in order to improve our yield of our manufacturing sites. In the U.S. specifically, we're getting a lot of support from the U.S. government. And as I mentioned earlier, we hope to release, or we will release instantly 30 million doses in the first week of the EUA. And equally, then we will beef that up with another 20 million in that month. And then you will see every month 15 to 20 million from our U.S. supply chain. But once again, equitable access for us is a crucial part of our strategy. So we are doing everything in order to supply as good as we can.
All right, Ruud Dauber, thanks so much for being here this morning. We appreciate it.
Next on Squawk Pod, are Wall Streeters working too hard? And honestly, does anyone care? Junior bankers are highlighting what they deem unfair work conditions. New York Times reporter Kate Kelly.
I think in this generation, people are speaking up. They feel like, you know, talent is at a premium in this market, and they need to be able to stand up for what's important to them, be it political, be it lifestyle.
And Vanity Fair's William Cohen.
Nothing's really going to change. It takes a long time to hire and train these individuals. And these firms are just flat out busy now, thanks to the Federal Reserve's policies of the last year.
That conversation right after this.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Welcome back to Squawk Pod. Here's Joe Kernan.
The issue of work-life balance is being brought up by first-year employees at Goldman Sachs. A small survey conducted in February reveals that they often work about 100 hours a week. Joining us to discuss Wall Street's work culture, Bill Cohen, Vanity Fair special correspondent, CNBC contributor, and Kate Kelly, New York Times Wall Street reporter, also a CNBC contributor. Are those numbers real? Okay, I got to admit, 5 days, five 16-hour days, what's that, 55, that's 80. Then you got to work Saturday and how do you get to 110 hours? Do you believe that? Now, what are they doing when they're there? Aren't they, do you think they're screwing around once in a while? Or are they really, I mean, do we see the evidence in of the fruits of their labor and their great analysis? What are they really doing? They got a stack of papers here and it's got to end up over here. What are they doing?
Hard to say, right? Because they're kind of at the bottom of the hierarchy, Joe, and they're doing all the sort of crunch work that goes into TMT deals. And of course, you wouldn't see it in the outside world. I think they said in the survey they're getting something like 4 hours of sleep a night. To me, what was interesting about this is how much has changed and how much has not changed. So just to level set, these are 13 San Francisco-based young Goldman hires who are working from home. But even working from home and not having to commute and not having to kind of suit up, if you will, for the office, it still can be very stressful. And this is something we've all learned in pandemic life, too, right? There's this blurring of boundaries between work and home. So when you're getting 4 hours of sleep a night, as they said, it's tough no matter where you are. At the same time, you know, this is the nature of entry-level banking. And I'm not certain that it's going to change because unlike other firms and financial services, these Wall Street banks hire thousands of young people per year. They train them up, typically shoulder to shoulder in the office with a lot of mentorship opportunity. And then after a time, people either stay or they go to hedge funds, they go to private equity, they might go to big tech, they might go to fintech. But no other part of the industry provides this degree of training.
That's something, Bill. I mean, what is the worst Goldman alumni is doing great? Is he not?
I mean, Goldman is a wealth creation factory, Joe. I think we've known that for a long time. But look, you know, Kate's exactly right. I mean, this is nothing new. Trust me, this is nothing new. What's new is the cleverness with which these 13 San Francisco first-year analysts at Goldman Sachs have gotten our attention and put together a clever PowerPoint presentation that looks very professional and Goldman-like. And, you know, swirled it around on social media and got a lot of attention. And it's sort of a cri de coeur. I'm not sure it's going to change what happens day to day at Goldman Sachs or any other firm across the street. By the way, this isn't just Goldman Sachs. Believe me, it's just these kids at Goldman were clever enough to get attention. But they did get the attention of David Solomon, and who's the CEO of Goldman. And so, you know, they're going to have to kind of deal with it. But nothing's really going to change. It takes a long time to hire and train these individuals. And These firms are just flat out busy now, thanks to the Federal Reserve's policies of the last year. They are just busier than ever, minting money. And so these guys are just getting incredible training, if you want to look at it that way. And they're also working very, very hard, which is something that they signed up for. Obviously, they knew right from the start when they were graduating college, this is what they're going to get, and they're well paid.
And senior managers that, or David Solomon or whomever that is able to not work as hard and go to the Bahamas or whatever it is that they were sort of pointing to as I'm doing this and you're doing that, that's not unique either. When you're paying your dues at the lower rung, Kate,
it's not unique. And I think David, you know, definitely has a home in the Bahamas. I think he has a home in the Hamptons, but I'm sure he's working when he's doing those things, taking calls in the car and whatnot. You know what I think is interesting about this, though, Bill and Joe, is that I think it's very generational. It reminds me of this piece I did recently on the Schwarzman Scholars, which are these master's program students who go to China for a year and study as part of a fellowship started by Steve Schwarzman of Blackstone and seeded, at least to begin with, by him. They recently sent this letter, about 160 out of about 600, so a not insignificant amount of these scholars sent a letter to Steve protesting some of his political donations. And I just thought, this is so interesting. I don't think this would have happened in my generation. But I think in this generation, people are speaking up. They feel like, you know, talent is at a premium in this market, and they need to be able to stand up for what's important to them, be it political, be it lifestyle. Solomon, to be fair, has said he is focused on employee lifestyle and bringing one's whole self to work. You guys remember that he does electronic music on the side, and that's kind of part of him bringing his whole person to work. So I think I agree with Bill. It's very canny of these young hires to put together this deck and present it to management in that way.
I think it's nice the way Kate phrased that, Bill, that it's, you know, they want to be heard. It's got nothing to do with the entitlement that we see with a lot of young people or the, I don't know. It's well documented, at least the impression that some of us get with some of our younger associates around. It's that they're able to express themselves more. They open up. That's a good thing. Right, Bill?
Well, I mean, it's a new thing. I mean, or it's not a new thing. I mean, we have to deal with it. I mean, when I was on Wall Street, for 17 years, you basically had to stifle yourself, Edith, as, you know, once upon a time used to be said. We all had these thoughts, and we were all thought we were working too hard. We all thought it was unfair that, you know, whether it was Felix Steve Ratner, you know, went to Martha's Vineyard while we were all, you know, working our butts off. That's just the way it is. We didn't really say anything.
I'll bet you there's one job for every 1,000 people that want to work at Goldman, I'm sure, or 10,000.
Harder to get into Goldman Sachs than to get into Harvard right now.
Yeah. Beck?
Guys, let me tell you some breaking news. I'm hoping we can get both Bill and Kate to comment on this. But Leon Black is quitting Apollo completely, according to Axios. And I think there may be some headlines in other places, too. You know that he was supposed to be stepping down as CEO and just taking over the role of chairman come July. But now it looks like he is out completely. Not entirely sure why for the change of plans in this. But I'll leave that up to you two to maybe make some comment on. Kate, what do you think?
Oh, Becky, I think this is probably, although I should say I'm not up to speed and it is breaking news, but I would guess maybe it's an extension of the board inquiry into the ties between Black and Jeffrey Epstein,
right,
which were found to be more extensive than Leon first acknowledged a couple of years ago when Epstein was in prison. And, that's an interesting story about Apollo. They recently had some headlines about young hires also facing quality of life issues. And I think they've got an interesting generational dilemma. Okay. They do have two executives, Josh Harris and Mark Rowan, who are of a younger generation than Black, who have certainly been very active and were co-founders of the firm. But even beyond that, they're going to need to think about that next level of leadership as they head into this crisis.
Beck, I just glossed over the Bill Shatner news. William Shatner, you know how old he is, right? He's been a friend of Squawk.
I forget. He's
for
way older
time.
Than you think he is. But
yeah, he's been a friend of Squawk for a long
now?
Time. 90. But he's like last year, I think he was on like The Amazing Race, like swinging on a vine across rivers to get, you know, to catch a train over like in Malaysia or something. I mean, he's a freak of nature, really. I mean, I think he found
90's the new 70, Joe.
I think he found something on one of those travels. someone told him something or gave him something in one of those other worlds where he visited to allow him to, because he looks, literally looks like he's about 60 right now. Anyway.
Probably learned something from Spock. They, you know.
Yeah,
Vulcans
live exactly.
A long time.
We have traveled back in time. Jim Carrey does. I do a good Jim Carrey imitating Bill Shatner. Actually, I don't. It's not very good. But I do. We did one. That's trending. And I happened to notice that. And I knew. You know who else? Clint. Clint is another one of our. He's still, you know, still making great movies as an actor and director. He must be close to 90. Maybe he's over it. Yeah, I think he did turn
90. Hand it to Charlie Munger. He's 97, and he held that conference, you know, his annual meeting the other last month. He was phenomenal.
So, right, and still as nice and reticent as always. Just, you know, sort of really, you know, cuddly.
That's right.
Cuddly, I think is the word.
Exactly. That's why we love him.
Yeah.
That's the show for today. Thank you for listening, as always. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 a.m. Eastern. To get the smartest takes and analysis from our TV show right into your ears, subscribe to Squawk Pod wherever you listen. And if you've already done that, thank you. Feel free to write us a review and share with your friends. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.